Hey, everybody, welcome to Shop Talk Show number 259. Just Dave and I doing a rapid fire. We're gonna just chat in the beginning a little bit. Dave's going to talk about what he kind of thinks is a super modern front-end stack. We're probably not going to come to any conclusions, but talk about some interesting stuff there. And then get into some questions. We're going to get into stuff like, how much does like cleaning up a database really matter? What about best practices as far as HTML comments? Do you use those anymore or not? We're going to look at some poll data of some interesting stuff, and we're going to have a little conversation about atomic CSS in the world around that a little bit, and some more questions too. Lots of stuff coming up here on Shop Talk Show. Dave, kick it off, please.
Hey there, Shopping Maniacs, you're listening to the Web Design Advice Podcast, Shop Talk Show. Dave Rupert here. With me is Chris Coyer. Chris.
That's right. Just another day in Shop Talk land, doing a classic rapid fire episode. I don't know. We're probably going on dang near 100, I would bet.
Getting close to 100 rapid fires. Oh my goodness. Who would have thought we'd get past two?
Nobody.
Hey, Chris, I've been thinking a lot. Can we do a little bit of like where we just talk on this episode? Yeah. Is that okay? I've been thinking a little bit.
Monologue.
What mouth blogging? What's the 2017 front end stack? You got opinions?
Whoa. You just dropped that on me.
I'm just dropping that. I mean, I know you guys just did a big old react because I listened to the CodePen Radio podcast with all your employees, and they were talking big about a big old React app.
Yeah.
In your projects app.
Yeah, that was cool. I wonder if we could we'll do a little crossover thing at some point to talk about that a little bit. In fact, the CodePen Radio just dropped that I wasn't on, but it was Rachel and Tim Holman and stuff talking about the React thing, in which they talked a bunch about how it was fun and hard and big and the
redo-y.
Yeah, it is redo-y. You know, I think maybe some of the, not the promise of React, I would say, but I always thought it was like, oh, React is so easy to jump to because it's just the view and you can bring, it doesn't prescribe anything else. And I think you'll find React is not a framework, that old joke and stuff. And then we kind of found it right away to be like, nah, you can't just sprinkle it in. You can't just like write just one little module over here in React and leave the rest of your app alone. Or maybe you could, but that felt a little weird. So right away, it was kind of an all-in thing. Like this page that you look at, this one is in React, but there's plenty of others that aren't. In our situation, we were sprinkling it in on we didn't build a SPA, you know, a single page app. That's not what we are gunning for. We reached for it because of state management, because there was just so much state and it saved us from spaghetti land. So that's what's interesting to me. Your question was, what's a front end framework look like? And I think
what's the stack? Yeah.
What's the stack? And I would think that the stack there is no prescribed stack. I mean, that's the boring answer. But of course, you can't get away with not talking about JavaScript frameworks because they're so huge these days. And a lot of people are reaching from them. And that's certainly one of the components of a modern stack today. And you don't necessarily need one, but when is that moment that you do need one? Why are so many people reaching for it? And that's what's fascinating to me. And I think people are reaching for it because they, for example, need an SPA. You want a single page app for some reason, because your app, it makes a lot of sense to not have that UX experience of refreshing the page after everything you go to. You just want a different, possibly smoother, possibly faster experience for your thing that you're building. So you want an SPA. So you want to go with, so you're picking some front end framework that offers that type of thing, a front end routing abilities. So that would be a way that you would reach for it. And then state is the other one, just like, oh man, there is so much to manage here that it's starting to feel spaghetti-like. And I think in the early days of React, that's what it was fighting against, was like, you all know that your code's Spaghettiville. Reacting to events both from the server side and on the front end side, and it's just getting a bit hard to manage. What if we reined that in a little bit, and things like React are saying, this is an opportunity for y'all to rein that in a little bit, not have HTML over here and some click handlers over here and a custom event that it's watching over here that's related to all of it but in a totally different file and stuff. Let's rein that in. Then I feel like another thing to throw on the thing there was that React doesn't necessarily come through on the on totally fighting spaghetti.
Right. Because it's what is my experience? I thought it was going to be like Rails level opinionated. Like, here's how you do this, this, and this. But then you get into it, and it's kind of like, whatever, dude. You could use ES6 classes. You can use like ES2 classes or like you object that prototype if you want.
You can set state from wherever the heck you want to and whatever component you want. What it does come through on is attaching like click handlers happen right in the JSX.
Magically.
So that it handles for you, which is nice. But the fact that you can then touch and play with this state from wherever is a little bit like, oh, but I'm still screwing up here. There is no way. It's not exactly reining in the spaghetti, like I said. So that's why Redux showed up, because it's like, it doesn't even do that much. It's just saying, it's just adding, I think I've heard somebody call it ceremony.
Okay.
To the changing of the state. It's just saying you can't just willy-nilly set state anymore. You need to go through this prescribed flow, which does feel more like Rails or whatever, right? Because it has specific ways that it wants you to do that.
Yeah,
Redux is saying there's one way.
I am setting the global header state.
Yes, but not through dispatching actions and reducers and all this stuff, it adds a bunch of complexity. I find Redux far equally or more complicated than React.
Mm-hmm.
And so because you've added the ceremony to changing state, it ultimately feels good, because it feels like you can't screw anything up anymore. You cannot get into a spaghetti like this has gotten away from me situation.
Yeah,
because of the ceremony,
you've followed this like strict set of rules.
Yeah, you can't accidentally break something, or you can, but like in a syntax way, not in like a, oh my god, this state of this thing has gotten away from me kind of thing, which feels good. So, but I mean, I know we're focusing on React and Redux enough stuff here. That's certainly a possible front end stack that you could go. It doesn't, you know, the word stack implies, okay, well, where do I put my data? Hopefully your whatever data situation you're in is like JSON-y, because all these front end frameworks are speaking JSON.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever that happens to be should hopefully that matches. We have to fake it because we're just MySQL, but it's not that hard because you just can convert it.
Yeah, like Stringify. So here's what I've been thinking. Can I?
Yes.
So CSS variables, or that it's called CSS custom properties, which for the life of me, how the like working groups come up with like the worst named version of what we all call it, I don't know. But CSS custom properties just landed in Edge in the creators update for Windows. So it's like rolling out. That means it's in every browser.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go through some technologies here. HTTP2 is out.
Okay,
right?
So browsers. Part of this stack is just vanilla CSS because of the ability of.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like, does SAS go away if I have partials and variables?
You're saying HTTP2, so I don't need to worry about concatenation anymore. Meaning, wow,
yeah.
We've said before on this show that perhaps one of the most useful things about SAS is that it's part of. It's like it does the build step thing for you of concatenation.
Yeah, and then the, like, I've been, you know, like inspired by React or whatever, and just even my own like atomic-y web design-y sort of stuff. I am now thinking a lot about web components, which aren't in every browser, but like it's basically just an HTML file with a CSS file and a script file, you know, linked up or like in line. Like it's just a mm-hmm. it's a modular chunk of code that you deliver to the browser on demand. So it's like, oh, this page only has these three components. So these three like partials only load. And then in the way Chrome just adjusted their rendering to where like you can have like if you have like header I'm going down your document, you have body, header, and then all those styles are covered by your critical CSS thing. And then you have like, you know, product grid.css linked up in there. It'll render everything above that link tag and then wait for that link tag and then render everything below until it sees another link tag like footer.css, and then it'll wait to render.
Yeah, which sounds bad, but is actually like, good because you're.
Yeah, it's almost like your page waterfalls in or, I don't know, like a tiers of a cake. It's like, oh, you still get the first top piece of cake. Like mm-hmm. the top cake is there. And so like, anyway, I'm like, does that, like, that's a very cool thing. It's almost React-y in the sense that you have components, but you're not doing any of the reactive, you know, you have to kind of build that by hand. But I just was like, with these kind of three things, I'm just, it's like, oh man, maybe I'm getting rid of SaaS in the next year or so. Which I know there's a lot of SaaS people and that's like, oh, Dave Rupert says it's dead. So it's no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying just like, for me, I think like it's possible this will fade out because I have a lot of the tools now in day-to-day development or the things I need are covered now. The problems that SaaS was solving for me are gone.
Because there is that, like, I don't know, every time you mention CSS custom properties, whether I'm at a conference or anything, it's like, that definitely comes up as like, why do we need SaaS anymore? Or do these replace preprocessor or variables, whatever. I do have an article about that in that they are complementary to each other. It's fair that it's confusing because you certainly can make a CSS custom property that is dash dash brand color and use it just like you would a SAS variable. And like you're saying, it actually becomes more compelling in a sense because you can set it like at the top of your document and let other CSS files use it.
Yeah,
cool.
Right now I'm in a situation where I was like, you know, making something and then both like style sheet A and style sheet B both needed the CSS variables, you know, like, cause
I should confirm that though. Is that actually true? Can you set let's say you load A.css first and B.css second, and there's literally separate HTTP requests. Can you use a variable and set in one and the other?
I don't know. I guess because it would be under root or whatever. I don't know what root applies. I guess it would be.
I bet it does work. Sheet. That's embarrassing that we don't know. But
it's got a cascade, though. That's the whole. That's CSS's one job. But
yeah, but like, is this because it all ends up in the CSS OM or whatever? But I wonder if because they're separated by file that it doesn't work or something. I'll look.
We could spin up a CodePen project and make this happen. Anyway, I just was like, they both need the colors partial, and I basically imported it in SAS, but I was like, I had to convert one file because it was just like a 10 liner of, you know, SAS or CSS, but I had to convert it to SAS in order to get those colors. And I just was like, dang it. Like, wouldn't it be cool if I didn't have to do that, you know, like what if it was all in some component and I just linked up my colors CSS and.
But you're saying that this is, you know, conceptually there's a lot going on here. We're not just talking about CSS. We're talking about the fact that, wow, we don't really need an abstraction for HTML stuff anymore because it's kind of web components, and JavaScript modules we're getting natively in the browser too. And modules in the literal sense, like the ability to import things, but also web components and just chunking stuff out into little pieces module sense. We get that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like all that's happening like this year. So, or like it's getting mature this year. So I don't know. I just was like, I've been sitting here thinking and I'm building stuff and for clients. And I just was like, oh man, is this all different now? You know, is it all better now? So I think the solution is I test drive it on my own blog and then play around. But anyway, I was
probably, grid's a big deal. Yeah, it works, by the way. You can totally.
Oh, really?
It works just how you think it's going to work. You know, like because you've set it on root, all the CSS gets combined and you have access to things that are set on the root anyway, whatever.
So A and B can share whatever variables you
set to root. Yeah, which you're right. This is the first I've heard talked about that the idea that you might like in your critical CSS, you might set a bunch of variables that CSS in web component chunks of CSS can leverage and use, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even your SAS can still use it, but yeah, you're like it. Yeah. This is just very interesting. It was only cause Edge made an announcement that they had CSS custom properties that I was even like, oh, wait a minute. That means like it's available or like we can use it. And then I was like, because the fallback for CSS custom properties is not great, no. Right?
Like, yeah, it's not.
There's
like
not a back out strategy, really. So
you're right. It's rough. It's either one of the. It's not one of those at supports kind of things because it's so.
It's a big.
Yeah, you'd be writing two code bases essentially. I think that would be a bummer.
Yeah, or doing a lot of dupey declarations.
Yeah, then why do it at
all? Color black, color dash dash brand black, or var.
Still, I mean, and we're focusing black. A lot on variables. I think to be fair, we'd you know, maybe we can do a show like this one night. We'd run down the list of SAS features, at least the SAS features that seem pretty widely used, and be like, how useful is this in 2017 kind of thing? And I bet my suspicion is, in fact, this is weird timing because later this week I literally have to give a talk that someone asked me to give called SAS Best Practices, and I'm okay. Gonna defend it. So,
all right. Well, so yeah, I mean, and then there's you know, there are things in SAS like partials and maps or lists. I forget what they're called, but basically, like you can create a list of things and a dictionary, and then you like for loop through it and spit out code. But I don't do, I never do for loops in SAS, like ever, almost ever.
No. And then I like them in that if you need to do one, SAS does them really nicely and none of the other preprocessors do it nicely. So it's like kind of one of those, like if you're comparing them and you find that less in SAS are like basically neck and neck and like, who cares really? I'd still pick SAS just because it's a little bit more prevalent. The community is a little bigger. It seems to be a little more everywhere. And little things like that are nicer if you need them. So it's like, I don't really care which one you pick. But if you're going to pick, just pick SAS because of that.
And the nesting, I would miss, you know.
That's like a huge one, especially the media query nesting.
But hear me on this. Yeah. If you're building in web components, you're only dealing with a very tiny slice of CSS, you know, because all of it's in the component. So here I am, Chris, on the verge of, I don't know, ruining my whole life trying to figure this all out. So,
and then I, a lot of times we're talking about what type of project is this useful for? And it's hard to have that conversation because it's like, I don't know, you work on and me both work on widely different types of projects. Like, would you do the, would you web componentize Dave Rupert.net or are you .com?
.net. Yes. I think I would start there, but that's like a terrible test because it's such a small, like, it's like, oh, I made my blog web components and now it's actually slower because it's really just three web components, you know?
Yeah, it's not a good target for that.
Yeah, it's not like it's not a UI heavy thing.
I mostly for the listeners out there. Like when we talk about this stuff, it doesn't mean that this is the future for all websites.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not, you don't have to change everything. But there's just cool things happening. I mean, like, Dan Wilson, who's been on the Shop Talk show about animation, he's messing with these custom properties like to trigger animation states, like basically like complex like dual state animations and stuff, and it's just killer. Like there's cool stuff happening.
I think the way his brain is thinking is any CSS like declaration, you know, like a key value pair that has a bunch of parts in it that you know, like comma separated parts, or like think of a box shadow or something that has a bunch of individual chunks in it that you don't always have access to outside of shorthand, and that you can now split them up because of variables and how they're live interpolated. So if you take this chunk of CSS that had little bits in it that you didn't have individual control over before, now all of a sudden you do.
And you don't have to change that. You don't have to like hot link into that element style attribute. You just change the root variable. You're like, you change like on to off, you know, or whatever. And it's all fixed.
And you can do some of that stuff right through CSS, but the fact that it's fairly easy and trivial to change the value of CSS custom properties through JavaScript is compelling it too. So it's one of those things where we're just scratching the surface of what's possible.
Yeah. Or I mean, like, you could be like, here's an example. Like you know, when you like have the page load and you don't want stuff to like animate in on page load, because that would be just kind of wangy. But like when you like delete it or move it or something, you want it to kind of pop or you know, slide off the page, you know? Mm-hmm. You could have like a no op function as your like default function that does nothing. It's like my animation on my list items is no op. But or dash dash or var dash dash some animation. And the default value is no op. And then when, you know, on document.load, like when the page is rendered, then you say, oh, this animation is now fly out or something. So that way when like your list items don't like zip in, they only zip out or whatever. So anyway, this is cool territory. I'm just very interested. We spent 20 minutes on this. Chris, we should get in the meat and taters here.
More demos. All right. Zach Sunderland writes in, what are the best practices for HTML comments? I know within JavaScript and backend languages, extensive and detailed commenting is preferred to maintain readability and ease future updates and maintenance. But within front-facing pages, the overall size of the file seems like a serious concern. Additionally, HTML is intended to be readable and logically structured, which seems to be, by definition, limit the need for comments. I researched it and found mixed results. So, yeah.
You know, I think the, like, SAS kind of advice of never ship comments down, or maybe that's just general programming, never ship comments to the client applies. So
I'd say like any minifier strips them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like a lot of people don't pre-process their HTML. You can.
I don't, but.
Nah, it seems a little funny. And that's a whole rabbit hole, but wasn't that, I feel like you used to get dinged in some kind of like Google PageSpeed things, like you didn't minify your HTML. I'm like, I didn't on purpose because it doesn't save all that much. I'm gzipping it anyway, or Brotli or something. Yeah. And like, if I do that, it's not white space sensitive, so it can screw up things potentially.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't, it's like, you didn't minify your HTML. It's like, well,
and the other thing is, how often do you write in just HTML? Like, certainly some people do. Nothing against that. But a lot of times what you're actually authoring is JSX or ERB or some Python thing, or you're writing in a WordPress template or whatever. And if that's the case, use that language's comments, not HTML comments.
Yeah, like PHP comments would go a lot longer.
Because then they just disappear in the compiled thing. And I do that all the time.
Yeah, what's your practice? Because I find myself doing like, you know, comment, this thing is, you know, starting the for loop for the doodads. And then at the end of it, I'm like, end the for loop for the doodads, just to like, if you have like double for loops or something, you're just like, I don't know which one I was doing. So this one tells me which one is ending where, but I don't know. Do you do? Yeah. I don't really do comments beyond that, probably, in my HTML.
Yeah, in and even then, because it's a for loop, that's not HTML. It's something else. So you can use that language. What I thought of when Zach asked this was that kind of thing, like you opened a div like in one file and you closed it in another file. Well, now the fact that there's multiple files means that there's some other language compiling it. So whatever that language is, again, use that. But I do that sometimes. It's like that this closing div is closing this specific thing because it just, I lose it in my head sometimes. Like, oh, what does this thing do again? You know, or if an opening div and closing div are in the same file, but they're separated by like a lot of stuff, sometimes I'll put it there. But yeah, it's true. I don't feel overwhelmingly needy about comments in HTML. Usually, it is pretty self-explanatory what's going on.
Yeah, and weirdly, not that HTML is self-documenting, but it is a markup language. You know, it's like a human readable. Here's what's going on. I think you need comments and stuff more when, like, you know, like CSS is abstracted away from that markup. So you have to kind of explain what's going on. You know, JavaScript is such a logical thing. You almost want to like step people through the logic you're writing, you know.
What about, do you write a lot of CSS comments?
Oh, buddy, I do.
Do you really?
Whenever I'm done, I go through and I like add like equals signs to like make the everything just look nice and tight and like headings, you know, and then I comment. Oh, I love to comment CSS. it's like this is what this is for. This is the intent of the thing. Almost like a spec test, like a. You know, cucumbery, like,
okay.
In order for the user to feel.
I wonder if you'd like that good.
KSS? Yeah. Case? Yeah, I, you know, any of those, I'm like, I don't code like that, so I get like angry, but I would probably benefit from it, but.
I'm more into the, like, I put, I don't know, opacity 0 here or something. And then it's for a weird reason. It doesn't make a lot of, so that's, I'm more into commenting on like the reason that this property is here is because I needed to override it, but just in this situation because of this. And I usually like really spell it out why a particular property is there. Not, of course, not in every property, but if there's any chance I could imagine looking back on this and be like, why is this overflow hidden?
Right, you kind of like document why you did, kind of like why you did like an important or an overflow hidden. Or
sure,
something.
I would say, yeah. The overflow hidden is a great one, or overflow visible, because you're like, why did I put that? Is it overriding an overflow hidden elsewhere or whatever?
Yeah, and I do like if it's like dependent or something, you know, like this is a body class triggered by some button, so therefore, you know, so like this is a state. That's happening here. So I like to comment CSS only because I like have inherited uncommented CSS and you're just like, what? Like, what's this for? Why is there 100 buttons? And it's, you know, no one has an answer. So anyway, there we go. Next question comes from Theo Land. Here, the Mac use among developers might not be as prevalent as you think. And here's a link to a Reddit poll. Are you following what Microsoft is doing with Windows Subsystem for Linux?
Oh, I put this. I mean, thanks for sending it in, Leo, but I dragged it on here just because, you know, we like to talk about multi operating system development sometimes when we can, because I'm on Mac, Dave's on Windows, and fairly recently and stuff. And this was on our web dev, which is, who knows, I don't know what kind of their community is there, but we can find out real quick by clicking on this link, which links to a straw poll, which has only three options on it: Windows, Mac, Linux. I voted for Mac, and it says I already voted on this poll, but I now can click view results, and it's a equal pie, pretty much.
Pretty much a 30-30-30 split there.
Which is awesome. That's, it's not what I would have suspected, especially with Linux being so big.
Yeah, Linux is at like 25%, which is, you know, that's the problem maybe with this poll is it's like self-selecting.
Right, so it's among, more like, you know, who's on our web dev, not who's...
Yeah, yeah. of people who like to hang out on Reddit, who uses Macs and Windows. But it's probably a big sample, bigger than usual.
It's 7,000 votes, though, which is okay.
See, that's a pretty decent it's sample decent. Size. But... so I, yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's like, I think, you know, it's very, that this is part of the reason, Theo, I switched to Windows was because I looked at our Shop Talk site stats and was surprised. It was like 50-50 because in my brain, it was about 100% Mac, you know, but we got, you know, we get questions about Windows and it was just like, oh, we don't know what, we don't have a good answer for you. So I was like, oh, I'll try to switch. Let me try the thing. And when I switched, there was no Windows subsystem for Linux, this bash on Ubuntu on Windows thing. So
I use it every day now that there is.
Oh my God, Chris, every day. I'm basically running Linux on my Windows
machine. Well, isn't that what Theo's asking too? Or have you been following what Microsoft is doing with WSL? I don't really, but I think that it's basically like Linux on Windows, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's basically full Linux on Windows, and they just had an update that like fixes like a serial bus thing or what. I don't. It's like it was a pretty big like blocker for people, but they just cracked it open for you. But yeah, I've been following it. I started a GitHub repo over on my GitHub, DavidTron5000/canisubsystemit, all hyphened out. And it's basically like what like front endy apps work and what doesn't work. And it's not complete, it's not accurate, but it's kind of gives you like an idea. And if you have a question, we can fix it. So I actually have somebody posted some stuff and like Node SAS works, Post CSS CLI works, Webpack works. So I need to like, and then I think Docker all works too now. So
and isn't that a big deal? Cause it's kind of like if Docker works, then can't you just put whatever inside that Docker?
Yeah. I mean, so like, well, like Windows has a Docker and it's good, but it, you know, it might have some quirks, you know, just like any VM system has quirks, you know. So, but this is not, the subsystem is not a VM. It's like Linux. It's like running on your machine. And then there's a little like thin layer that, you know, translates it to Windows processes. So it's kind of weird, but yeah.
So are we getting to the point where it kind of like, this poll isn't quite the reality because at some point it's like you develop on whatever you want. Like it doesn't right. Like in what you picked was just what you want the window Chrome to look like and how you like the keyboard laid out.
Yeah,
and
stuff yeah, like this, that. At this point, yeah, like everyone's using Linux. You know, like that's like the reason you use a Mac, unless it's for Sketch only, like it's probably for the Linux tools set. And then the reason you use a Linux is for the Linux tool set. And the reason I use Bash on Windows is for the Linux tool set. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Linux everywhere. In fact, yeah, Alex at CodePens, I built the box just like you did, all Linux. And
oh, yeah.
Just doing it. Full UI, too. And you know, he's got plenty of opinions about it, but he's basically like, if you want to do it, there's going to be some app to do it. It'll just be like kind of worse.
Right.
You know, which is rude, I guess, but it's just the way he feels about it.
No, I've used like GIMP, you know, every time somebody's like, I'm like, oh, I don't want to pay for Photoshop or whatever, you know, and then people are like, oh, use GIMP. And I download GIMP and I'm just like, this is nothing like Photoshop. This is for Photoshop for people who have never seen Photoshop. It's just that different. It's good, like, and you can do things, but it's not the same, you know. Mm-hmm.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Rollbar. That's rollbar.com/shoptalkshow. That's the URL you want to go to get 3 months of their Bootstrap plan for free. Rollbar is all about error tracking. It does an amazing job of that. So you know, it's really easy to integrate too, and it integrates into any application, you know, JavaScript, which is Ember, Angular, Backbone, Node.js, or your Ruby stack with Rails, .NET, PHP, even Flash, iOS, anything. They've got it all covered. You put it in there and it starts capturing the errors that your app throws, which it's definitely throwing some, believe me, and lets you know about them. So not only so you need to know what these errors are in order to fix them, gives you the stack trace and all that, it groups them intelligently too. So if your app is like throwing like thousands of this one kind of error, but it's kind of minor, it's good to know. It's good to not get an email about the every single time that error happens thousands of times. That's annoying. You know you need to fix it, but maybe it's lower priority than some other kind of bug and allows you to prioritize and that type of thing. It integrates with like Slack and Jira tickets and all that type of stuff too. So you kind of get to decide like, okay, put this type of error here or whatever. It allows you to, you know, gives you the information you need to fix the errors that are happening in your app and prioritize them and know about them, but not be too annoyed by them and stuff like that. Just a couple of lines of code to integrate into your app, whatever that app is. Oh, it's kind of amazing software. Thank you, Rollbar. Again, the URL is rollbar.com/shoptalkshow. $87 value to sign up for their Bootstrap plan for free.
All right, here we go. Matt's Land writes in, I remember Dave said something about cleaning up his database on some site, deleting rows, I guess. This is something I've been thinking I should do to speed up my site, but I don't really know what to delete. like which rows in the database can you safely remove that won't somehow break your site, but can speed it up or speed clean it up. Would love to hear more. So I don't know what this is in reference to exactly. But there's kind of two kinds of optimization I do. There's that like go through and clean it out. And I wouldn't really, I don't know. You're going to have to, there's a great plugin for WordPress. I usually do this on WordPress sites called WP Optimize. Is that it? Is that still the one?
I'm thinking of three there different things here. One of them is that like, okay, optimize it. And like, I don't know, there's just generic best practices stuff you can just do on a MySQL database that help it. I don't know what those are exactly, but the fact that they're best practices makes it pretty appealing to clean up. But that's not going to remove tables and rows and stuff.
No. But what it can do is be like remove all drafts, you know, from your site, or like remove all, you know, duplicate saved versions of posts. And if you have like auto save enabled on your WordPress site, chances are you have like heaps of these like kind of dead posts just littering your database. And you'll see that whenever you're like new post and it's like some giant number compared to the previous post, like the post ID is like 4,000 and your previous post ID was like 400. Like that means you have your database has created 3,600 posts in between those two time, like in between those two posts that unless you kind of went through and cleaned up, they still live there. So,
So there's cleaning up stuff. Oh, some old plugin I used 4 years ago made some tables. Should I delete those tables? Yeah, maybe. But is it, I don't know that it's, you know, just because you have like a foo.html sitting on your server somewhere, it doesn't make index.html slower. You know, like it doesn't right. matter that much. It's mostly like just to feel good about the cleanliness of your database. But I don't think you're going to see massive speed improvement for deleting a couple of rows and a couple of tables here and there. It's just not.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can see speed improvement from like those like auto draft, like killing those. But like MySQL is designed to work like up to a million rows, like really great. Like, or it's it goes way beyond that. But like you can have a lot of data.
Yeah, in a garden variety MySQL database, a million rows is fine.
Yeah, a million rows is like whatever. I don't care. So in some sense, that's not a big deal. The kind of other kind of database optimization I like to do is like slow queries, which is fun because you basically can like have some tool. Like New Relic, or I use one called Skylight, which is old Yehuda and Tom Dale thing. I don't know if they're there anymore, but it's good. It's like basically installs a little Rust client on your app, and then it like reports all your kind of queries, like what the SQL query is. And then it can like say like, oh, you did this N plus one query, which is like a computer science-y kind of thing. But it's basically like you did a slow query. You did something that takes a lot of database time. Like it has to return this page, it has to actually go through the database twice. And, you know, at a couple thousand rows, you're probably not experiencing a hit. But if you're at a couple million rows, it's going to take a long time to do that. Like to go through the database once and then go through the database again, just to serve that page. So those kind of things are fun to figure out, like kind of listen to and bring down. On Daytrip, that app, Rails app I built, I had one page which was like a list of friends or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was 100 plus SQL queries, Chris. It was just like,
whoa.
And I was just like, oh, I didn't even realize I did that. But I just had to add like, you know, some like eager loading sort of stuff. And then it was
part of the, one of the quote unquote dangers of abstracting away. You know, you didn't write those MySQL queries. You just asked probably Rails or whatever for some data. Yeah. And the way that Rails found was the most efficient way for the way you asked was 100 database queries.
Right. Well, yeah, it's like that's what I coded. So I needed to kind of figure out the way to make that go, be a lot faster. And, you know, it was cool. It was fun. I called it golfing, database golfing, because I just was like, I'm going to get this as low as possible, like as low as I think I can, you know, without messing it up. Because I was just, you know, it's, you know, you want to do like the power of a database is you get like really clever associations, like, oh, I can cross-reference this data with this data. And it's awesome. And it's really cheap to do, you know, with 10 rows in your test database or your local database. Mm-hmm. But like when you start getting big, it actually, you know, you're talking like it might take a full second to render that page. So now, you know, you have to like figure that out. So
yeah, that's bad, because that's, you know, when we're talking about this type of performance, that's before the HTML page is even generated to come back. And, you know, a lot of times that people talk about 80-20 in performance, the 80 being front end stuff. Well, now you've slowed down the 20 too. So you,
yeah. Well, in the back this end. Can happen. This is Rails specific, but that can happen in WordPress land too. If you use like get posts a lot in WordPress, that's basically like, I'm going to spin up another query or, you know, and that's, it's okay to do it like once, you know, like to have, it's okay to have like 3 to 5 queries. Like that's not a huge deal for MySQL, but it's like when you're doing 100 and you're, you know, kind of trying to associate every single one or like fetch the author now for every single post.
Well, that's I have a recent example where I just did like WP get authors, or what, I'm sure that's wrong, but there's some kind of WordPress function of get authors, and it will, you know, it's just an abstraction that queries your database to find all of the users that have a role of author. So great, you'd think that would be a one query kind of thing, but it's not, because it not only gets all those authors, but the use, you know, where that data is stored, some information about that user is stored is elsewhere. Like the user table doesn't know how many posts each individual user has. That would be a different query, right? They'd have to do a count on the post table of posts that are associated with that user or whatever. And just the way that that API is designed, that it comes back with that data. So I tried to run it on CSS Tricks and it crashed. Wouldn't even run it, because it's just there's really too many users and too many posts and whatever. So I ended up having to use like get users instead, where I could control that kind of thing more. Yeah, you just never know, you know. You kind of assume sometimes that you use a built-in simple looking API and it won't be a big deal, but you never know.
Nope. That's, yeah, you don't know until you hit production.
Right, until you use something like Postlight or whatever to look at your slow queries and it will tell you.
Well, and there's also this other dimension of database load, you know, which you try to like cache things and cache queries and memcache and all this stuff. But like you can think you have a good thing until 100 people hit your site at once. And now there, you know, if you think of like an air traffic controller, they have to wait for the previous one to finish, and then your server starts getting busy and choked up and, you know, overwhelmed. And you don't
caching happening, perhaps.
Yeah, that's hard to test. Like Dave Rupert, localhost, you know, that's hard to like summon a bunch of bots to hit my localhost website, you know? So I don't know. I wish there was a simple solution there.
Yeah, there's tooling, though. I mean, that's why DevOps is a thing. When I read this, Matt's asked about cleaning up his database, and there's another way you can think about that as well, which is like, how is it structured?
Like, like spinning tables out or like sharding?
Well, that for sure is interesting, because there's speed to be gained and lost doing that kind of thing. But we just did some work on Chop Talk Show in a even more simplified way, which is we had so much data that was just like put into the, you know, the text area, essentially the big, like, what's all the content for this post, blat. And we've used that for 5 years, and now we're like, you know what, if we could go back in time, it would have been nice to split that stuff up a little bit into individual chunks. And that has a manifestation in the database. Fortunately, we didn't touch the database. We just used a plugin to help us split that stuff all out. But that's kind of coming soon, because we were kind of like looking at redesigning ShopTalk, as we've mentioned a little bit. Like, we're nowhere in that process, but we're thinking about it. And we're like, you know what we're limited by in this design is the data. What do we have? What can we easily get access to in individual chunks, you know, especially without writing like regexes to try to split it apart?
Yeah, like if we wanted to put sponsors or even the people who came on, gave up their time to come on the show, if we wanted to put them in like a card or something, you know, we couldn't do it. Like we don't have the technology. So I think I don't know. It's good. We've got it all set up and we got some help.
We got it all ready to go. So we'll talk about more about that later, but we just now we're like, oh, we'll do the really hard part is actually the data part. Once we do that, we'll do the design, and now the hard part's over and we're still like, oh, right. But we still have to design it.
Wasn't planning on that
happening. Someday one of us will have some time and we'll do it.
It'll be good. All right. Chris, shall we go one more? We got time for one more here. Mike Riley writes in, it's been almost 5 years since the CSS tricks poll, and I'm curious, where do you fall when it comes to ordering your CSS properties for in the declaration? For years, I've ordered them by type, grouping font styles and display positioning styles, and then I got a new job where the standard was to order them alphabetically, which I learned to like as it was easy to find the property I was looking for. Now, with new display properties, Flexbox Grid, etc., that tend to need multiple properties in a declaration, I'm leaning more towards grouping them again. Just curious what you are doing these days.
Just went around the other day because there's a couple posts with like link baity-ish titles, like "For the love of sweet Jesus our Lord, alphabetize your properties" or something like that, and then another one that was like, "Do organize your CSS properties however the dang well you please." Anyway, I think it's funny when it's fun to watch headlines go down. I'd say I fall in the "I don't care about this" category. I don't know.
Oh yeah. I really like alphabetizing, but you know, it's right. These like grid properties and stuff, they should probably live together. Thankfully, they mostly do with like, you know, grid dash something, flex dash something.
Oh yeah.
But the one that messes it up is display grid and display flex. It would be like way higher than the other two.
Yeah, and it always feels higher, like width. But, why is width separated from height and it's way at the bottom?
Yeah, but you know, there's no question. You know, how many times have you rolled into a CSS file and there's like four height declarations in one module, like one rule, you know, and you're just like, who did this? Who's in charge?
That can be rather confusing too, because you're like, I'm looking at the declaration. It's right in front of my face. Why is it not doing what I owe?
Oh, I wrote it. That's usually
maybe a linter can catch that kind of thing. That's the, you know, what Mike was saying, kind of like, I think, what's the situation? I got a new job where the standard was that. I think if that was the case, I'd be like, okay, well, it's my job, so I'm going to do that. I wouldn't like immediately be like, no, now that I have arrived, things will be different now. You know, I'd avoid that a little bit because maybe you'll find that there's a good reason for it or not. And then I was thinking like, okay, what if it's my job and I was being cool, I was playing along, you know, this is just how we do things here. And it was like a year and I was like, I still hate this and it doesn't seem to be helping in any way. It just seems annoying. I don't know if you'd come to that, but even if that was the case, then I'd program my way out of it. I've definitely seen a PostCSS plugin that alphabetizes your properties. So even if nobody else used it, I would use it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the grouping. I like the grouping stuff. But then you have to have like rules around how you group and in what order you group. So I don't know. It's like, oh, I like earth elemental properties to be the first ones. And then I do my fire properties to be the second ones. That's the second group. And then my, you know, my water types go at the bottom. And, you know, it doesn't, you know, like you're introducing an arbitrariness into like, and that's the thing. The computer does not care. This is all for humans, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I hate to be a heathen here, but I've done nothing.
You've done nothing.
Right. I just put the properties in there that I'm doing, and there's no order and there's no grouping and there's no anything. And I think naturally probably there's some grouping because it's just, I don't know how my brain works as I type them or whatever, but I have seen no downsides for it, with the caveat, as always, that I tend to work on alone and on small teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when you're working with people, it gets a little bit tough. But, you know, I don't know. Every time I'm like, oh, what did I just write here? And then I highlight it and then sort lines. And like 9 times out of 10, I'm like, okay, that's better. Like it's alphabetized now. Great. It's actually feels
cleaner. I've seen a passionate argument for organizing by the length of the declaration.
Oh, geez. And then they like to do all the tabs to make all the things match up. Oh, God. Oh, when people tab the left side to like make the colons line up, that gives me the downright heebie-jeebies, and I will wage war on anyone who does that.
It was really popular in the prefixing days. So that you.
Oh, yes. Oh, man. Making your colons line up. I don't know. 1,000 drop kicks.
There's so many things. I can't even look at, like, when there's no space after the selector and before the first curly brace, I'm like,
oh, no space. I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but Trent Walton does that. It drives me nuts.
But it's getting more popular, I think, because it's in JavaScript land, having if, you know, like left colon or left parenthesis, like right no space after if, that's more popular, I think. That's more standard. So, oh, God. I don't know.
No, yeah, spaces, guys.
Spaces. I'm heavy spaces. On the spaces, too.
It G-zips out. Don't worry about it. All right. I guess we got one more. Is that all right? One more? It's kind of just a comment here from Simon Freshly. Otis writes in, I heard you briefly mention tachyons in a recent Rapid Fire episode. Have you guys spent some time with it beyond just playing around for a few minutes? The concept of building virtually any layout without writing additional CSS still boggles my mind. I feel like functional or atomic CSS gets a lot of unwarranted hate. The true powers of composing micro helper classes to build UI elements seems to be somewhat misunderstood. Many people don't look past their initial negative gut reaction when exposed to something that feels completely different and challenges established best practices. Those who stick with it a little longer come back with nothing but praise. What are your thoughts on that? I hated that approach at first, but stuck with it and obtained amazing results. In 10 days, I was able to remove an out of control amount of legacy CSS and rebuild a fairly large website with tachyon helper classes only. The amount of technical debt was removed during the process and simply amazing. Love the show. Thank you, Simon.
Remember just the other day on the show, I talked about how I like, this isn't the same as atomic stuff. which I think Tachyens falls in the atomic CSS bucket. And there's multiple ways to kind of define that and talk about atomic CSS. There's a post on CSS Tricks talking about it all real recently with a heated debate below. And I've been monitoring it, and it's starting to, I might shut it down soon because it's starting to, it's one of the more like, yeah, this is a hot topic in a very fiery way these days. But I think I was talking about Bootstrap or Foundation or something, and I had some little projecty thing, and I was like, I'm just for fun, I'm going to try to write none CSS, which is not my muscle memory. I was like, I'm just going to, every single thing I want to do, I'm going to look up and find the how they do it in this framework, and only use helpers and only use their patterns and stuff, and just for fun, just to see if I can do exact, because I think that's how most people use it. They follow the HTML pattern that is shown in this framework, and they just do it. And I think that's how you have, that's especially how you have to work in something like Tachyens, I think, is it's this very pretty, it's not large in like file size, but there's hundreds, thousands more classes that do one little tiny thing, like add some padding or change a color or become flexbox or whatever. Tons of them. And you don't write any CSS. You just link up this one big chunk of CSS that are these thousands of classes. And then in the classes on your HTML elements, you say, I want this thing to be color gray. I want it to be display flex. I want it to be 90% wide. I want it to be, so there's, you know, 2, 3, 8, 10, 20 classes on individual HTML elements. Why would you do so? That's the moment at which people's skin just loses their crap, or whatever. They can't handle thinking like that. That's not how we were taught. That's not in the web design Bible. That's not how we do things around here. And that's the moment where I'm like, just hold on, because like I don't work like this either. I have the same reaction. It feels very weird to me. It seems weird to, like, I don't mind CSS. I write CSS. My CSS isn't huge. I don't have huge problems with CSS. There's not, it doesn't seem to be solving anything that I'm having a problem with. But I see other people that are having problems sometimes. I hear there's lots of conversation that we've talked about even on this show that people are having. It's where inline styles, remember that whole debate came from? And it comes from this place, like, we're kind of afraid of our own CSS. We don't like how everything in CSS is global and stuff. It becomes messy and it becomes complicated and it becomes error prone and it becomes blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, whatever, I don't have those same problems, but obviously you do, and you're starting to reach for inline styles. It's kind of the same situation here, is that you can't be afraid of your CSS anymore. It's just some CSS that someone gave you to use. It will be, Tachyens is like 80-some K un-gzipped, 13-some K gzipped. That will never change, other than minor updates to the library or whatever. 10 years from now, that file's going to be the same size. It's not going to be, never it grow. Doesn't become in this, yeah. And nobody's afraid of it. It's just this library. So I conceptually kind of get that, and I don't know. I haven't gone for it yet. I haven't built anything in it, but I think that's an interesting thing to think about, an interesting conversation, and not something that you should freak out about and yell at somebody else over using.
Yeah, I think it's good. I understand that entirely. I do think it's like your CSS isn't growing, and that's a good thing. Like it's basically SaaS. It's like a managed solution for your CSS. It does mean you're putting a lot of like classes in your markup. So you're kind of moving the burden of grouping classes and stuff into your markup. And I think at some point you do become fluent in this. So you know what F3 space F1 dash M space F headline one means. Right. Or F headline L, like eventually you know what that means, or PA3, PA5 dash NS, like you know what that means. That's cool.
What it doesn't account for, a lot of people are like, well, what if you want to change buttons across your entire site? Now you got to go change it in 20 places. And that's what we are taught, is that you don't do that anymore, or you shouldn't have to be able to do that. You should be able to change it in one place in your CSS, and it's not doing that anymore.
Yeah, so I think that's my only gripe with it, or just kind of like why I maybe wouldn't use it, is because I feel like you're not escaping burden, you're just moving it from the CSS over to the front end, you know. And but I think it does. I think it's good, like explicit, you know, languages and or styling. I think that's good. I don't think it's I don't think it's a bad thing. I know some people get very ruffled up about it, but I think it's good. And like Simon's saying, he like refactored something and it was a good deal. And I actually read Simon's blog post on it. And it was, you know, like one of those took like 100 or a 1 meg CSS file down to just this tachyons file. So like just
that's
shredded,
huge, you know?
Yeah. Like just shredded through like
can you imagine having a 1 megabyte CSS file, and it's not even as adaptable as one of these other types of frameworks. It's like now you have this massive chunk of CSS that isn't even that useful.
Yeah, no, I can very much because I am working on with one. So I think it's
there's other like, kinds available too, right? That there's some atomizer or something. So it's now you're not just shipping this 13K of thousands of CSS selectors that do a certain thing. You write in a certain format that's like BGC parentheses and then a hex code or something. And it just knows that that's background color, whatever. It doesn't mean that there's thousands of background color things available in the CSS style sheet you link up. You run it through a processor. It sees that and says, oh, I better make a class that does what this is asking it to do and make that available in the CSS. So now you're not only shipping 13, now you might even be shipping like 2K because it's only the things that you use are in there.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah, yeah.
You know, so, you know, if at that point you're splitting hairs almost. If you're talking about shipping 13K versus 2K, it's like, okay, that's something, but it adds a build step.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. I'll link up Simon's post because it's pretty good read in terms of like the benefits of switching. I think he had a good experience with it, and I think that's the thing too. I think people need to share their experiences with it. I think if CSS is complicated and confusing to you as well, like I have friends who, you know, write a lot of Node and stuff like that, and they're just like, CSS, I just don't get. Like, this is great because it's like very explicit.
It also doesn't limit you to the aesthetic of one particular framework, just the atomic stuff, which is annoying. And sometimes you want that and sometimes you don't. It was Jake at CodePen. We're going to redo some admin stuff on CodePen that nobody will ever see, but it's just for us. And it's kind of like, why do we have to write all this stuff? I mean, he literally argued for, let's just pick some visual framework. That way it'll serve us now, and it'll serve us like, oh, we need some weird style of table or a flyout or something. It's just covered because it's in this framework. And I was like, cool, fine, let's do it. Whatever.
Yeah. Hey, there you go.
Ta-da. Yeah. Done. We picked like some materialized thing.
Ooh. So yeah. Dang. Well, cool. Awesome. I guess we should probably wrap this up, Chris, because,
it's the end of the show.
It's the end of the show, but I guess we should say we're kind of in conference season and stuff like that. So we're kind of like, there might be some rapid fire. So we're kind of, running in and out of town doing things. So, bear with us. And if you got questions, send them on over, because this is the kind of, we're in a section of time where we can answer those questions. So thank you for, listening to this and your podcatcher shorts. Be sure to star heart, favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to share?
Shoptalkshow.com.